AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. This AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology Herbicide from Syngenta, the first dicamba herbicide premix, which offers both contact control to manage the weeds you see and residual control to help protect against the weeds you don't see yet. Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology is a restricted use pesticide. Happy Wednesday, and that means we've got the Farmer Forum set up and ready to roll, and we're going to focus on cattle this morning. We'll kick it off with some market outlook, and then we'll take a look at how market conditions are influencing plans for the rest of the year.
Live from my melting snow fort via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. Today, it's all about the cows, starting with Darrell Peel of Oklahoma State, then on to the Farmer Forum with Scott McGregor and Casey Schumacher. And, of course, we'll get the scoop from Margie Eckelkamp of The Scoop. Now, here he is, the chief ruminator himself, Chip Flory.
Absolutely. Hey, keep the equipment dry in that melting snow fort there.
Yeah, I've got some tarps up trying to keep the drips from hitting anything important.
It's a good plan. It's a good plan. I don't know if it was a good plan to begin the show inside of a melting snow fort or not, but it's a good plan to keep things dry. Yeah. Welcome to AgriTalk, everyone. I'm your host, Chip. That's John Harith. John, thanks for sitting in today. Davis got the day off. He'll be back with us tomorrow. As a matter of fact, real quick, Davis and I and Jim Wiesmeyer and Brian Grady will kick off day three of the virtual Top Producer Summit event, 8 o'clock tomorrow morning until 8:30. We're going to get you up, get you rolling. It's going to be high octane. There might be some caffeine involved, but it's going to be a quick free-for-all, just a half hour free-for-all with the guys from Pro Farmer. So really looking forward to that. There's still time to get signed up for it. There's a big day today. I cannot wait to go back and look at the Global Farmer panel that I think is happening right now, John.
Yeah, I think that's right.
That's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, and if you're listening, I think you can still take advantage of that special 50% right. off that you're picking up people's half the tab for it. So it's only $75 if you
just
use
AgriTalk. $75. That's right. That's right. And then tomorrow at noon, I am also going to be moderating a panel farmer discussion. It's sponsored by Main Street Data and their Market Vision program. But we're going to, at noon, it's going to be a group of farmers, and we're going to talk marketing. We're going to talk market outlook. We're going to get into some of the strategies that they like using the best in the environment that we're in right now. So that's at noon tomorrow. So busy day, man. All right, let's get to it. What you got in the news, John?
Of course, the top thing Tom Vilsack said for his return as USDA Secretary. The Senate voted to confirm him yesterday afternoon on a 92-7 vote. Chip, this is interesting. Senator Bernie Sanders was one of those no votes. That marks the first time a Democrat has opposed one of President Joe Biden's nominees. Mm-hmm. Vilsack is going to be sworn in virtually by Vice President Kamala Harris later on today.
Okay, very good. Yeah, that no vote from Bernie, it may have been because of some of support for scientifically based advancements a certain company that starts with an M or started with an M that drew the no vote from Sanders.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, still easy passage, only 20 minutes of debate, so we knew it was going to be smooth sailing for Tom Vilsack to return there. The House looks on track to pass the $1.9 trillion coronavirus aid bill by the end of the week, but one key ag provision has been stripped out. An amendment that would extend the WIP Plus program to include 2020 crops has been stripped out of the bill that was sent to the House Rules Committee. That, according to ProFarmer's Jim Wiesmeyer, the amendment was backed by several Republicans as well as Democrat Cindy Axne of Iowa, who sought assistance for Iowa growers hit by the 2020 derecho. Chip will get some reaction when Congresswoman Axne joins the free-for-all on Friday.
Yeah, that's right. And when we had Austin Scott from Georgia on, Jim and I asked if this provision could be stripped out because it's a Republican amendment. And Austin Scott thought, yes, it would be, even though Axne supported it. It's going to be fascinating to get her reaction tomorrow.
Yeah, it is indeed.
On Friday.
On Friday, yeah. It's obvious that the House will pass that $1.9 trillion COVID aid measure, but hurdles still confront the Senate, especially regarding the push for a $15 minimum wage. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia is working to whittle it to $11 an hour, arguing it's a more reasonable goal in rural West Virginia, where the current minimum is $8.75. In 2016, Manchin supported raising the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour. Senator Chuck Grassley plans to press U.S. Trade Representative nominee Katherine Tai to follow through on the trade deal with China. Tai sits before her confirmation hearing today. Grassley said he wants to make sure the Biden administration will continue to press China to fulfill its ag purchase commitments under the Phase 1 trade deal. He also plans to ask how the Biden administration plans to recruit Japan, South Korea, Canada, and the EU to join forces to push China to be a more fair and transparent trading partner. And poultry giant Pilgrim's Pride pleaded guilty to price-fixing charges yesterday. They will pay a $107.9 million fine to settle the federal charges. Pilgrim's Pride is the first company to plead guilty in the alleged scheme to reduce production from 2012 to 2019 in order to boost broiler prices. There you go, Chip.
That 108, call it, million-dollar fine is well below what was recommended by the federal government. And yeah, the reason that they...
There are indications that Pilgrim's Pride is cooperating with the government. Also indications that Tyson is cooperating with the government.
Yep. Yeah, and it's that cooperation that got them off cheap, you know, even though they had to plead guilty. But it got them off cheaper than what the federal government recommended, which only means that there's this story is far, far from over, John.
Indeed, yeah, there will be other. Well, in fact, there's several other executives that have pled not guilty so far.
Exactly. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Thank you.
All right, that's John Harith. Let's bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop. Good morning, Margie.
Good morning, Chip.
Hey, last week we talked about SimPass, the new product of the year. Tell us, give us another product that was considered.
Yes, so this is a reader's choice program that we run every year. So our audience tells us what's the best new product from the past year. And the runner-up is BioPass from the Andersons. Now, this is a biological that gets blended in with starter formulations. And what really stands out about BioPass is it is shelf stable for 2 years. So it's able to be in the tank, yet remain active for growers once it hits the soil and is exposed to moisture. And that's a great advantage that this biological product has been able to demonstrate.
Well, the stability is one of the things that some of these those other biological products have struggled with, right?
They have, and what's unique also about BioPass is that its biological populations double every 45 minutes, depending on the soil temperature. So not only is it able to be stable, then yet easily activated with soil moisture, and then rapidly boost those microbe populations, really aiming to help those plants get early access to soil nutrients.
How often does it double?
Every 45 minutes.
Holy mackerel, that's growing that livestock herd that lives underground in a hurry, Margie.
It really is. And you know, they say that they've seen an 87% win rate when used with an in-furrow starter application, but also has benefits in a 2x2 placement as well. And in talking with the team at the Andersons, they're obviously helping bring it to market through their retail centers, but also everyone else that they sell and market product through.
Fantastic. Good work. Thanks, Margie. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Chip.
All right. That is Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop, at Farmers Advisor on Twitter. Okay, when we come back, conversation with Dr. Daryl Peel, ag economist there at Okie State, coming up next on AgriTalk. If soybean growers want to protect against herbicide resistance and preserve the genetic yield potential of their crops, they must aggressively manage tough weeds throughout the entire growing season. Today, I'm joined by Bobby Bachman, herbicide product lead with Syngenta. Bobby, why is it so important for growers to use an overlapping two-pass herbicide program?
A robust season-long herbicide program helps growers reduce the weed seed bank manages weeds before they become a problem. We recommend a herbicide program to include products with multiple effective sites of action. This is key for managing herbicide resistance and controlling tough weeds. Applying products that deliver at least two effective sites of action takes pressure off of the individual active ingredient, allowing growers to not only have clean fields and maximize yield potential, but it also protects and preserves herbicide technologies for the future.
Yes, excellent, Bobby. So what program would you recommend to growers who want to keep their soybean fields clean throughout the season?
Regardless of trait platform, start with a pre-emergent herbicide program delivering early season weed management, utilizing products such as Boundary, Broadax, or Prefix herbicides from Syngenta. In dicamba-tolerant soybeans, apply Tavium plus Vapor Grip technology herbicide early post-emergent. This approach will overlap your residual applications while maximizing weed control and help the crop reach its full yield potential.
That's outstanding. Thank you, Bobby. That was Bobby Bachman, herbicide product lead with Syngenta, explaining the benefits of applying Tavium as part of a strong two-pass herbicide program of overlapping residuals. Don't let time run out on your herbicide management plan. Visit SyngentaUS.com/Tavium or speak with your Syngenta retailer to learn more. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Tavium plus Vapor Grip technology is a restricted use pesticide. Vapor Grip is used under license from Monsanto Technology, LLC.
AgriTalk is brought to you by TechMix. Cattlemen, are you tired of losing newborn calves? CalfPerk is an energy boost that gets weak calves standing and nursing. Get CalfPerk from TechMix at calfperk.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. It is Wednesday. We're going to have a farmer forum starting at the bottom of the hour. But first, I want to set the stage for it and have a conversation about what's going on in the cattle industry and from a financial standpoint, market standpoint. What are the fundamentals in here? We're going to have a conversation with Dr. Daryl Peel. He is an ag economist, extension economist down at Oklahoma State. I knew I was going to do that for some reason. Drives me crazy. At Oklahoma State University, Dr. Peel, I apologize, and welcome to AgriTalk.
Good morning, Chip. Thanks for having me on this morning.
I'm glad that you're here. I'm glad that you're here. I'm glad to hear you laughing and willing to stay on after I did that. Okay, let's get into this because the what prompted the call to you to get you on the show was last week's Cattle on Feed report. Because the placements came in above expectations, the marketings were below expectations. So in other words, we had more going into the feedlot than expected and fewer coming out of the feedlot than trade expected. But the February 1 feedlot inventory lined right up with trade expectations. That's normally not how it works. How did we get there?
Well, you know, there's a little bit of, I guess the term is slop in the way these numbers work. Part of it's just the rounding on the percentages and so on. But a couple of things to keep in mind. The placements, you know, were a little bigger than expected, at least on the average trade guess. They were kind of at the upper end of the range. There was at least one or two analysts that thought it could be this big. So it wasn't a huge surprise. The other thing to keep in mind on the marketings number that's really kind of important, January was one of those rare months where there were actually two less business days this January compared to a year ago. Right. We quite often have one more or one less day, but 2 days is rare. So when you if you take the marketings for January divided by the number of slaughter days, the average daily marketings were actually above a year ago by about 3.8%. So it wasn't necessarily a poor marketing month, and the marketings were pretty close to expectations, but the placements definitely were a little bit on the big side.
Okay, very good. Placements on the big side. Let's talk about the weights of the cattle that were placed. With this feed price that we're seeing, Dr. Peel, I would assume that growers are looking for those heavy cattle or heavy feeders rather than the lightweights.
Well, they're going to be over time. And, you know, the bulk of the increase in placements in this particular report was in the 700 to 900 pound category, which is standard, you know, sort of feeder cattle numbers. The biggest 100 pound range was in the 7 to 8 weights. So I don't think we're seeing that yet. I think as we go through the next 4 or 5 months, we're going to see more of that feed market incentive, if you will, that feedlots will be looking at as they make placement decisions really start to show up. The other thing that was in this report was there was actually about a 5% year-over-year increase in the placements of cattle weighing less than 600 pounds. And, okay. You know, those cattle were just out there. I think they probably got marketed in January as a carryover from December. Some of those are tax cattle, if you will, people that wait until January to market. And so they wound up in the feedlot as some lightweights.
Gotcha. What about the cattle coming out? What's the weight of those cattle on the fat steers?
Well, you know, we've been running very heavy carcass rates, of course, all of last year. But you know, so we're still quite heavy on these carcass weights. Now, seasonally, they do come down. We usually reach a seasonal low here in April or May, and we've kind of started to turn and move towards that seasonal pattern. I suspect that this winter storm that we've had, it'll take a couple of weeks for those impacts to show up. We'll start to see those weights come down a little bit faster. But the bottom line is cattle are big, and part of that's just part of the long-term trend of cattle getting bigger. Yeah. They've been getting bigger for 60 years. And, you know, last year, even before we got into the COVID delays and all of the backups and everything that happened in the middle of the year last year, cattle started last year with heavy carcass weights, and they ended the year, even though I think the backlog was fully taken care of before the end of the fourth quarter. They're still big just because cattle are bigger. They can be bigger. They perform well. And we've had, up until this recent storm, we've had very, very good weather. So we've had excellent cattle performance in the feedlots.
Yeah. Yeah. What is the number there, Dr. Peel? Aren't we producing like 30% more beef? Or no, the same amount of beef off of 30% fewer animals, right?
Yeah, roughly. That's exactly right. We produce as much or a little bit more beef than we did in the mid-1970s at the all-time peak in cattle numbers, which was, you know, 30, 35 million head more cattle.
Right. Yeah. Seems pretty sustainable to me if we can build that kind of efficiency into it.
Well, yeah, you know, watching these carcass weights, I have to confess, I've been predicting for 20 years that these cattle just couldn't keep getting bigger. Carcass weights had to peak out, and I've been wrong consistently, and so I've kind of quit doing that now. I'm not convinced from a genetic standpoint that there's really a limit in sight. Now there are some marketing issues associated with these big carcasses that still come into play a little bit, but the bottom line is these cattle can be bigger, and we don't get into the overweight, you know, yield grade 4 and 5 kind of cattle that we did before. At these, I mean, you know, 25 years ago, cattle at these weights would have been horribly overfinished. They're not today. They have the genetic capability to be this big.
And the quality, we're talking about quality now, and it's not just that they're not over fat. The marbling, the overall quality of the beef that we're putting out there right now, Dr. Peel, I don't think I've never experienced anything like what's available to the average consumer in the average meat case out there right now. It's incredible.
It really is. We've made tremendous progress in the last 15 plus years in improving the overall. So, you know, we're grading 75% choice. When you add increased prime on top of that, we're at 86 or 87% choice and higher quality grade. You know, for years and years, I used to look at the choice and select box beef numbers. If I wanted to kind of get an average carcass value, I use 50-50. Well, that's not right anymore. You've got to use, 75% choice. And so we've really made dramatic improvements, not only in the weights, but also in the quality of these cattle.
There's no going back from that anymore, is there? I mean, we're going to have to continue to, or the industry is going to have to continue to produce as much choice beef as we're producing now, because the consumer isn't going to accept anything less.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, in the U.S. in the domestic market, we always had a bigger demand for higher quality beef than we were producing for a lot of years. And so we had to work to find ways to market the select stuff. And that's where some of the value of export markets came in. That was a good home for some of that lower quality meat. Now we don't have as much of that imbalance. In fact, you know, there are cases, limited cases, where we actually find ourselves people wanting select for certain specific uses or markets that can't find enough select. And we've also increased the prime percentage enough so that our top end white tablecloth type restaurants, for the first time ever, really don't have to scramble for that product. They've always taken everything that was available and wanted more. And we've actually gotten to a point now where I wouldn't say we've fully saturated that market, but we're a lot closer to that than we ever have been.
Crazy. Crazy. Okay. did you get a chance to look at the cold storage report out yesterday afternoon?
I did. Yeah. Briefly.
Okay. Yeah. What were any big takeaways from that cold storage report? Because it showed a 16.2 million pound decline in frozen beef stocks during January. That's a little bit more of a drawdown than what we normally see in January, isn't it?
It is. You know, cold storage always peaks seasonally, either in December or January. In the wintertime, we build up cold storage stocks. A lot of that's related really to cull cow slaughter in the fall and putting some of those trimmings in cold storage, because we really want to grind them next April and May as we get ready for hamburger season. And so, but you never quite know when that peak is going to happen. So, you know, we're kind of at the seasonal peak or pretty close to it. We did pull it down from January. But if you look at the chart, we're pretty much on a typical, seasonal pattern here for the cold storage.
All right. Profitability time here. Start at the bottom line with the cow-calf. What's the expectations?
Going forward, I think there's modest, possibilities for profitability for the cow-calf producers in 2021. Okay. Obviously, I mean, we got to look across the board at all the inputs, obviously it depends a lot on where you are. You either maybe didn't have much hay because of the drought, or you used up a lot of what you had in the last 2 weeks. So those things may be an issue going forward. But in general, our general expectation for cattle prices, calves, feeder cattle, and even fed cattle generally across the board is for a modest, 5 to 8 or 9% annual increase in prices at this point, unless something new and surprising jumps up to slap us down like it did last year.
Yeah, exactly. Dr. Peel, I sure enjoyed this. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, Chip. Anytime.
All right. Well, we'll be tapping the resource down there at Oklahoma State University again in the future, the near future. Thank you, Dr. Peel. That's Dr. Daryl Peel. Oh, man, I can't believe I did that at the start of that. We got the Farmer Forum coming up next. Scott from Iowa and Casey from Nebraska. Hey, everybody, Chip Flory here. I've got a great deal for you to tap into all the information at the 2021 Top Producer Summit. You don't have to travel. It's all online, and I'll pick up half the tab. That's right, because you listen to AgriTalk, Top Producer is working with us to take your fee from $150 down to $75. Use promo code AgriTalk when you register at tpsummit.com. It's a half-price deal only for AgriTalk listeners. Use promo code AgriTalk at tpsummit.com.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
Joining us now, ProFarmer editor Brian Grady. This bean market, Beej, we just keep grinding to the upside.
Yeah, we didn't take out yesterday's highs, and that caused a pullback. But we're still trading with double-digit gains in the bean market. Meal market's participating, as is soy oil. Soy oil is actually leading us to the upside today in that complex. And you look across pretty broad base, not only across the grain and soy markets, but also in the livestock market. So this is a pretty solid move up here midweek.
Yeah. All right. Wheat is back participating with some price gains. What's going on there?
Well, I think that while corn and soybeans haven't pushed above yesterday's highs, the wheat market has triggered some buy stops, and so we're kind of off and running there. Still, waiting to assess the winter till damage from last week's storm, obviously in the U.S. It's going to get cold in parts of the Black Sea region and has been cold. But, I think that just mostly the wheat market kind of catching up here to what the other two markets have done.
Gotcha. Very good. Over to the livestock trade. Lots of plus signs there.
Yeah, definitely. Cash cattle trade, we're getting started. Steady, maybe a little bit firmer trade there. So that's a little bit of a positive. I think the bigger thing is the cold storage report yesterday was friendly for both beef and pork. So that's given us some support. Right. And then when you talk about the hog market, really strong gains in the front end of that market being led up by the pork cutout value and the cash hog market, which are both ripping higher.
Very good. All right. Thank you, Brian. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
This year, you can attend Commodity Classic without leaving your farm. The 2021 special edition of Commodity Classic delivered digitally March 2nd through 5th. Register at CommodityClassic.com.
Let's get this thing rolling. Just a reminder that the Farmer Forum is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement. Thank you to ACAM for sponsoring the Farmer Forum. Just go to www.agweb.com/ACAM to learn more about America's Conservation Ag Movement. Let's get it going. Casey Schumacher out in western Nebraska. Casey, welcome back. How are you?
Doing good, Chip.
Good, good, good. Glad you're here, man. And we've also got Scott McGregor here in northeast Iowa. Scott, welcome back. How you doing?
Real good, Chip. Great to be back on.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys are here. Glad you're here. Let's talk about last week first, guys. Casey, how'd you handle the weather out in western Nebraska?
We'd been spoiled for so long this winter that we kind of deserved a week like that. But we made her through and had to have some tractors that ran for 24 hours to keep things going, but we got her accomplished.
Okay, how'd the herd handle it?
Really good, and actually, you know, we only got just a little under 8 inches of rain all of last year. Pretty dry out here, but we had such a surplus from 19 left over. I still have a bunch of cows out grazing and just getting protein supplement, and they're doing great. So
good. Man, that's a great report, Casey. That's better than what I expected. How about you, Scott? How'd things go for you?
Yeah, it was your typical Arctic blast that seems like we get every few years. You know, we had 14 days pretty close there. We had an overnight low of below zero, so it was a pretty long stretch. You had to get a little creative with some water tanks, but all in all, the cows ate through a huge pile of feed, and I don't know if they gained a lot of weight.
Right. Scott, hold on a second. Scott, your audio is a little hard to read. I'm going to talk to Casey for a little bit, and Joe's going to get you straightened out and get your audio right.
Fair.
Casey, when we were talking with Dr. Peel, we got to the profitability conversation right at the end of that, and I should have gotten to it earlier, but he made the comment that it depends on where you're at. Now, you've got some surplus hay for the cows from 2019, but there are guys that are going to be looking at some incredible feed costs going forward, right?
I think that's the big issue. You know, on the background inside of our operation, I just was lucky and I locked in corn in September of last year. I think there's a few people that are in that boat that haven't seen this high feed prices yet. Unfortunately, I didn't get my distillers locked in, and I'm paying for that. But that's one of the major things coming out. There are guys that are seeing closeouts with 95 cents to a dollar pound of gain, and that gets tough.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly does. No doubt. We've got Scott back with us. Scott, we were talking – you were giving us a report on how the cows handled last week's weather. What do you – go ahead and finish your thoughts there.
Yeah, no problem. We're always kind of ready for those cold blasts. You know, this one didn't have as much wind in it, so it really wasn't – the wind chill wasn't horrible. But the cold temperatures are there with us for about 2 weeks, and, you know, stuff was getting froze pretty good, but – we had enough snow cover and whatnot that we're ready for spring. It just seems like we're in our 5 month winter here in Iowa again.
Yeah, exactly. And then we were talking with Casey about profitability and whether or not you got feed
costs locked in and everything. Scott, what's your situation? I understand that you raise a lot of your own feed, right, Scott?
Exactly. So, yeah. You know, we're not hand to mouth on our feed, you know, buying corn every week, but, you know, it's the distillers and the byproducts that are sky high. And, you know, you hope once every couple weeks you can get a load that's a little bit off spec and, you know, a little dollar cost average on that. But some of these modified distillers are getting up well over $100 a ton. And it's plus you got to put trucking and freight on top of that. And that's pretty salty. It adds to that cost really fast.
Yeah. Yeah. Casey, does that sound about right for your market on the DDGs?
I just got a truck this morning I had to beg for $282 a ton with the freight on it for dry distillers.
Oh,
that's pelleted, probably.
No, that's just the powder.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that makes, because it was $224 at one ethanol plant near it, $124 at one ethanol plant that I'd heard of, and we've got enough contracted that it kind of helps a little bit, but they won't let you do too much of that.
Yeah.
Freight really kills us out here.
Say that again, Casey.
The freight really kills us out here. We're so far from an ethanol plant.
Yeah. But it's still a feed that you're going to use, or a feed component that you're going to use, isn't it?
Yeah. It's just hard to beat. The cattle do so good on it. It helps stretch everything else out.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Totally agree. Scott,
what's your forage, or what's the forage situation like around here?
We were getting short last fall as far as the grass. You know, in Iowa, we don't have any winter grazing to speak. You know, we're going to get a couple, 3 weeks of corn stalk grazing in the fall. And then, you know, our December was fairly open.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have lots of years. It'll lock in on Thanksgiving, and we're feeding every bite of food those cows eat till the 1st of June. So it's not much fun. It's a lot of work with cows around here.
Right. Absolutely. Casey, what about you, the forage situation? I know you've got some, or you said you've got some left over from 2019 even, but is that typical out in your area?
No, it's not. It just, everything kind of worked out that way. Everybody's kind of hunting for grass right now. We got a little bit of moisture out of this snow, but like you said, we got 8 inches of rain or moisture last year. It's still extremely dry, and everybody's kind of waiting on go to see what happens.
Gotcha. Okay. What about, I know it's dry out your way right now, isn't it, Casey? Are you concerned about that as we start to think about spring?
Yeah, that's probably one of my bigger concerns is if it's dry, you're going to see a lot of these heifers get sold on the yearling sales, and you're going to see, you've already seen the way cow sales. That's probably the biggest thing right now for the cow-calf big ranch country out here is our cull cow prices have just been in the tank. And you look at the cutter cow cutout over $1.80, and here guys are getting 50-60 cents for them.
Okay. What about your situation here, Scott? You feeling pretty comfortable for the spring?
I think we went into freeze up, which we haven't had much of a freeze up, but the tiles were not running last fall. Okay. So I think our soil profiles needs replenished big time, because it was dry last fall. The tilers that worked up to Christmas said it was dry, but that's where we're at. And I think this drought, you know, starts creeping into the Corn Belt a little bit come June, July. We better be ready, because I think this, who knows, this could be the year. It just keeps expanding. If that, when they start releasing them drought index monitors, that could be showing up here come May.
Yep. Okay, we were talking profitability with Dr. Peel. We talked about it a little bit with you guys. If there's one spot where we can find the profitability, it's on the packing side of this industry right now. And I just even hesitate to say that packer profits right now are about $400 a head. Casey, what do we got to do to move some of that profit further down the supply chain?
you know, we're going to have to get capacity. We're up against the wall. We have to compete. The other thing that's going to play into that is these big carcass weights. I think the market's been telling guys to keep feeding. I think April you see some more big cattle come in. And honestly, looking at the big cattle coming in, and like I was talking about the cull cows, if anybody wanted to start, as popular as feeding cows has become, start a plant to kill cows and some fed cattle, I think that's where the market is asking people to go, and I think that's where they need to go.
You agree with that, Scott?
Casey's 100% right there. It's all about kill capacity, and this COVID situation has really, I wouldn't say tied the hands of the packers, but, you know, they're not getting the throughput that they need to be getting. And then this cold snap, we just backed up probably 80,000 head of cattle in the last 2 weeks.
I wonder.
And that's not what we need. We need these plants to run. We need them to be, you know, at 90% or whatever they need to be running throughout the week, and then killing on Saturday just to get caught up, because we are not very current. And that snowstorm's not going to help. Not snowstorm, but cold spell is not going to help anything, just backing everything up.
Scott, it's been 18 months since the cattle finishers had leverage in this market, hasn't it?
Yeah, we have no leverage. It's, you know, the futures market came up here in the last month, and it did what it was supposed to do. It was supposed to try to get the cash market to follow it, and that cash market does not want to follow the futures like the producers would like it to do. It's just not performing. You know, it's come up a little bit, but not enough.
It's stubborn. It is doggone stubborn, no question about it. Okay, that is a setup for a conversation about President Biden's Buy America mandate. Does it open the door? Does it clear the path back to country of origin labeling? We're going to discuss that next right here on AgriTalk.
Never miss a story. Text NEWS to 31313 to have today's top stories delivered to your phone.
Welcome back to the Farmer Forum, which is sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement. Thank you so much to ACAM for sponsoring the Farmer Forum. Don't forget, go to www.agweb.com/ACAM to learn more about it. Scott McGregor from Iowa, Casey Schumacher out in western Nebraska on the Farmer Forum today. Guys, I'm going to give you some numbers, okay? Here we go. Farm Journal Pulse did a survey of 1,459 respondents. And it was just simply asked the presidential approval rating, President Biden. We got 9% strongly approve, 5% somewhat approve, 6% somewhat disapprove, 5% not sure, and 75% strongly disapprove of the job that President Biden is doing. This is the first survey that the Farm Journal Pulse has done during the Biden presidency. Scott, what do you make of that? Why such a high disapproval rating?
Well, I think people want to see results. We're pretty much a result-driven, you know, society anymore. And when Mr. Biden said he's going to unite the country and bring us all together, I don't think everybody thought that was with a Bic pen, that he's just going to push through all these executive orders and not have any debate on these issues. And people feel that their elected officials need to have debate, and that's not happening right now.
Yep. Casey, your take?
I'd agree with Scott. I think the big thing is we're not focusing on anything of substance. We went from impeachment number two to now a $1.9 trillion giveaway full of pork. There's nothing. And I think it was very narrow, short-sighted to use reconciliation on this $1.9 trillion stimulus deal. if he would have went for the infrastructure, I think maybe you would have seen a turn. But it just going back to same old Washington, I think, is people's thoughts.
Casey, that's a great mention or a great take on the reconciliation path for the COVID stimulus package, because it does take it away from debate. It does make it feel like like it's being done behind closed doors. You're right. That I'll bet has a lot to do with it, with what is going on. The Buy America mandate that is out there, some are thinking that this is going to clear the path for us, Casey, back to a country of origin labeling, mandatory country of origin labeling. What's your thoughts there?
I don't think so. I think the main focus is on the sectors that provide the jobs. And if you look at it, the packing sector isn't interested in mandatory country of origin labeling, and that's where the majority of the jobs are in the beef supply chain. So I don't see that going forward.
Scott, your take?
Yeah, it's the mandatory part that's got the hang up. You know, if we could find some voluntary marketing aspect and just have it, you know, because there is value. I think if you have a list of 10 items that consumers look at in making their daily buying decision, you know, that is probably down in the lower 25% of their concerns. You know, they still like the taste, they like the value, they like the safety. That's the most important part when a consumer's thinking about their daily choice of what they're going to buy. It's not, you know, but there is a marketing aspect to it. And if someone can market their cattle or their beef using it, more power to them. But making it a mandated issue, it's hard to take that way.
Yeah, if we can demonstrate that there is more profit to be made by the packer by doing country of origin labeling on it, then Casey, they're going to put the label on there, right?
Yeah, and I think that goes back. One of my big focuses right now with the beef side of things and cattle is outside markets, and I see the same in the grains. Is the value of the dollar is going to be a big player in what's coming in and going out of this country.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. And beef exports, while they're not, they are as important to the cattle side of things as exports ever have been, and maybe even more important right now, Scott, because of the leverage issue that we were talking about. If we could, but it's hard to get that money to move from the box B, from the export market, all the way down and get it back to the cattle finisher. That's where the difficulty is.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, exports are very, very important in the beef industry, you know, 12-13%, pick a number, but it's adding a lot of value back, and we say that it's adding a lot of value back, and that's just doing lip service until we can show the producers that $350 to every fed cattle or every animal sold is because of exports. We need to, that's important, but we just need that cash back in the feedlots hands is where we need it,
exactly.
Not all in the package.
And exports put value on products that we don't necessarily use or are desired in the U.S.
Absolutely.
So there's that too.
Yep.
Casey, what's your priorities for the week ahead?
Just getting by with the weather mess still. We did get a little bit of snow, and it's dry 6 inches under, but I got some mud on top to deal with now.
Yeah, that's going to be an issue, no question. When do you start calving?
Not till May. We'll wait till it's green grass and nice weather.
You bet. Casey, thanks so much for joining us today. That's Casey Schumacher out in western Nebraska. Scott, when are you guys going to start calving?
That'll be right at 3 weeks to a month for the heifers, and the cows will be into April. But we hope the snow is gone by then and the temperatures have regulated a little more.
Yeah, no doubt. Thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later.
Hey, man. Take care.
You bet. That's Scott McGregor here in Northeast Iowa.
All right. Thanks for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon. We're going to have a conversation with Carl Setzer from AgriVisor. And tomorrow morning, wow, I'm not even sure what we're going to be doing tomorrow morning. We're going to talk mental health tomorrow morning on AgriTalk. Thanks to Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology Herbicide for sponsoring the AgriTalk podcast. Talk to your Syngenta retailer to learn how Tavium can help protect against tough and resistant weeds for 3 weeks longer than dicamba alone. And remember to always read and follow label instructions. Tavium Plus Vapor Grip Technology is a restricted use pesticide.